I'm Ashley Legasic.
And I'm Catherine DeClercq.
And we make up CTV's newest podcast, Life Unmasked.
We'll bring you everything you need to know about exactly how we're going to return to normal life post-pandemic.
New episodes come out every Thursday morning on iHeartRadio, and they're available on all streaming platforms later in the day.
We hope you'll tune in.
Friends say she always brought smiles to everybody else. The 17-year-old girl struck and killed near her Scarborough school. Tonight, there is shock and sadness among those who knew her. Good evening. Nadia Muzumder was in grade 12, remembered as a passionate volunteer with a bright future.
Tonight, the sense of pain is immense. CTV's Austin Delaney is live near Birchmount Park Collegiate with more. Austin.
A cloud of sadness hung over this school today. A 17-year-old student just wrapping up her last year of high school. She had a whole life ahead of her until it ended on this road.
Nadia Muzumder was just 17, described as a community volunteer with big hopes and dreams.
She always had a smile on her face, like no matter what the day was. If she had a bad day, good day, she was always bringing smiles to everybody else's faces.
But yesterday, that young life was cut short, hit by a van while crossing the road near her school. Birchmount Park Collegiate students mourning the loss of one of their own.
It's really sad for us. I'm still coping with the thing that I still know her, but she still passed away. It's still hurting.
Scarborough MPP Dolly Begum is a family friend.
She was very sweet. She was so loving. She was her mom's world. She wanted to do anything and everything possible to make her family, her community happy. She had lots of big dreams.
At the school, the flag was flying at half-mast. Grief counselors there to lend an ear to grieving students.
When you go to a school for 4 years, a big high school like this, it's still a school community. She was here for 4 years, right? So she was really well-known. And I can tell just by being there for the short time that it was, that it is absolutely devastating to these kids. Just devastating. And I saw staff, you know, sort of huddled together. Again, 4 years going to a school, you're going to be well known.
The accident happened in broad daylight over the lunch hour yesterday along a 50-kilometer-an-hour section of Danforth at Birchmount.
My understanding at this point is the incident happened at the major intersection of Danforth Avenue and Birchmount Road, which, as you can easily see, four lanes of traffic, and oftentimes speeding is a heavy, heavy issue.
The 40-year-old driver of the van is cooperating with the investigation.
Nadia was an only child, a caregiver to her mom who is just devastated today. She wanted to be a nurse. She wanted to help others. Reporting live, I'm Austin Delaney.
Thank you, Austin. Meanwhile, in Brampton, a 13-year-old girl has serious injuries after being hit by a vehicle in the area of Thorndale Road and Rouge Street. That girl remains in hospital tonight.
Just ahead, the rising cost of just about everything. Budgets getting tighter as inflation balloons. How long we can expect prices to keep going up, and why there's more than just one factor at play.
And speaking of at play, we're counting down to tip-off at Scotiabank Arena. It's the Raptors' turn to see a full contingent of fans in the stands as they start a brand new season. The stage is set, the hard court is ready, and so is We the North.
The first meaningful action at home in 20 months, and the place will be packed. CTV's Mike Walker's live inside Scotiabank Arena with more. Mike.
Well, Nathan, Michelle, the Raptors are on the court right now for their pregame warm-up. Well, there is a buzz of excitement outside the arena among fans who are eager to cheer on the Raptors in their first regular season home game since February of 2020. A sight that hasn't been seen since the onset of the pandemic.
It's my first Raptors game I've ever been to. Pretty excited to have them back in Canada and ready to cheer them on.
Raptors fans packing Scotiabank Arena tonight for the first meaningful basketball game in 600 days.
The whole atmosphere in the arena, I miss that a lot.
A new Raptors shirt.
Molly Hutton stocking up on merchandise ahead of tonight's season opener against the Washington Wizards.
Before, we always had really great energy in the arena, but now, like, coming back after it being so long, I think it's going to be amazing.
Go Raptors!
Sharon made the trip from PEI, her first game in more than 2 years.
The excitement was just so much. I just couldn't just wait to be back in the stadium. I used to have season tickets, so I missed them.
The Raptors last played a regular season game in Toronto on February 28, 2020. The pandemic has seen the team call the Disney bubble in Tampa home due to protocols and border restrictions.
I can't believe it was standing on center court.
President Masai Ujiri says it's overwhelming to be back in Toronto.
It's been tough. I wouldn't say just for us, you know, it's just if mental health, everything you think about, this has been a challenging time. And you know what? Here we go. We're back.
On the court, it's a new era for the Raptors following the departure of franchise player Kyle Lowry, a young squad that includes a trio of Canadian talent. Montreal native Chris Boucher says he's looking forward to playing in front of family.
I feel like I had a great season. I couldn't do it in front of my family and fans, so I'm really excited.
Fans know the season will be a grind, but are eager to get behind their team again.
A lot of changes on the team, so we're really excited to see what everyone else brings to the table.
It's going to take some time, I think, for them to mold together and stuff, but I think by the end of the season, they're going to be pushing strong.
Excited about all the other rookies. I'm just glad they're home.
MLSE says a few hundred tickets are still available as of this afternoon. As fans pass through the gates, they will have to provide proof of vaccination. Tonight, MLSE using the new verification app to scan QR codes.
Unlike previous home openers, there is no Jurassic Park outside the arena due to COVID-19. Fans are starting to trickle in the arena now. Tip off is at 7:30. Reporting live inside Scotiabank Arena, I'm Mike Walker. Michelle, back to you.
Thank you, Mike. Meanwhile, restaurants and bars in the area are busy tonight, but only to a degree. While the stadium can sell out, other places still have capacity limits. CTV's John Musselman is live on Bremner Boulevard tonight with more on that side of things. John.
Well, Raptor fans are heading towards the Scotiabank Arena right now, and in behind you, you can see a lot of those restaurants here. They tell us they are welcoming customers back, but as you acknowledge, it's full capacity in the arena. It's not the same case in these restaurants.
Server Bree Jolly says the return of the Leafs and Raptors is a big boost to her bottom line.
Oh, it's great to get back into it, making money again, bringing revenue into the business. It's been really good now that it's picking up, because it was hard for a good chunk of time.
Jolly is a server at Hoops Restaurant. It's located just steps from the Scotiabank Arena. It's a popular spot for fans who stop in before the Raptors game or watch it here on one of the screens.
I think it's great that they're open. It's opening night. There's a lot of excitement in the atmosphere, and it's nice to be able to kind of get some normalcy back.
I think it's a big boost for them. I think from a morale perspective, it'll be booming, hopefully a bit back to normal. Probably still obviously masks, stuff like that, but I think we'll get a little bit more of a bit of a normal life again.
Most of the businesses here along Bremner say the return of professional sports is great news. It's been a difficult 18 months. Jolly says there's a buzz back in the air, and it's nice to see longtime customers coming back to the bar.
We have our regulars. They like to come sit at the bar, watch the game, or they go to the game. Yeah, we see them all the time. So it's nice to see those familiar faces back in here.
Customers still need to show proof of vaccination before they're permitted inside.
And one other positive bar owners tell me tonight is it's fairly mild out, so a lot of people are sitting on the patios here before, during, and hopefully after the game. Reporting live, I'm John Musselman. I'll send it back to you.
Thank you, John. Meanwhile, it was meant as a lifeline for restaurants during the pandemic, and now it's permanent.
Sidewalk and curb lane patios here to stay. Cafe T.O. changing the look and feel of many city streets. CTV's John Woodward is live along the Danforth with more. John.
Nathan, this city has undergone a lot of change in the pandemic, and people here are happy this is something positive, bringing with it a little taste of Europe.
Whoopa!
That's Saganaki, cheese on fire at the Athens restaurant and tavern, the best Greek restaurant outside of Greece, according to them.
I have everything here, good food, good people, nice people, you know. They love being here.
And their curb lane patio on Danforth gives them more than 60 seats under the Cafe T.O. program, a lifesaver in a pandemic where public health measures limited people dining inside.
It's amazing that how people enjoy that. The weather has helped a lot with that. Like, sometimes we feel like we are in Greece.
Popular with customers, too.
The fact that you're outside, you know, You see the trees, you see the clouds, you see the stars, so this becomes more romantic.
Love them, love them. Let's have them all the time.
Why?
Well, first of all, it gives the whole neighborhood a really nice air. You can walk around. It's almost European on some levels.
That European feel will be here to stay, with the city's leadership endorsing a plan to make Cafe T.O. permanent.
It changed the look and the feel of our city for the better.
2022 will be a transition year to iron out some kinks, including patio accessibility and congestion. 1,213 restaurants use the program at a cost of about $2 million for program costs, $2 million for staff, $2.26 million in lost parking revenue, and $775,000 in lost permit fees.
People love these patios.
Worth it, City Councillor Paula Fletcher says, to keep the restaurants alive and change the look and feel of the city.
The Danforth is an example of transformation from just a super highway to cafes, to a bike lane, to music at the cafes, and to beautiful murals and painting on the street. And it all happened during the pandemic.
Restaurants hoping the permanent program will let them invest in more attractive permanent fixtures, as the Europeans do.
Now, the program isn't perfect. The city's received about 600 complaints. 400 of them are due to noise, and 5 of them are due to patios getting hit by cars. So traffic management, obviously a work in progress here, which the city promises to monitor as they go to set the rules in stone next year. Reporting live from the Danforth, I'm John Woodward. Nathan, back to you.
All right, thank you, John. Cloudy, but still above seasonal. Michelle Jobin's here with a look at the current conditions. Michelle.
Well, Nathan, yes, another above seasonal evening on the way for us, but a bit of an unsettled one as we see a system move in, more so in the overnight, early morning hours for the city of Toronto. That is going to be a big change for us. We've had some spotty showers today. They're moving out of the area for the most part. Risk of showers this evening. Right now, winds are out of the southwest. They've just shifted from west to southwest at 22 kilometers an hour. That's helping to amplify that feeling of warmth, give us a little bit more humidity. There will be a change, though, after the system that rolls through tomorrow. Temperatures like this throughout the region, for the most part, in the mid to the upper teens. We reached the 20-degree mark in southwestern Ontario, very close to it here in the city of Toronto. And right now we're sitting at 16 at the islands, 18 at Pearson, an overnight low of 14. I'm going to talk about the system coming through early morning through tomorrow. It's going to change things up significantly, and we'll talk about that in your 7-day coming up. Back to you.
All right, thanks, Michelle. Gas prices going through the roof and putting food on the table costing a lot more.
Canadians already suspected what was confirmed today. Inflation is way up, hitting near a nearly two-decade high. CTV's Vanessa Lee has the details.
From gas to groceries, Canadians are paying more for everyday necessities.
Like fresh fruits and vegetables, and this is fall. Like, things should be, you know, it's harvest time. It should be cheaper, but I notice they're quite expensive.
Inflation has hit an 18-year high, with the consumer price index rising 4.4%. Gas prices are up nearly 33%. Food, almost 4%. The price of meat, up 9.5%. And passenger vehicles, more than 7%.
This is due to the supply side constraints more than anything. And those bottlenecks will probably be worked out in the early part of 2022. And a lot of this pressure will be alleviated as long as it doesn't spill over into higher wage demands.
Among the foods that are now more expensive, cooking oil, up 27% since January. Bacon prices have also reached record highs, now an average of $8.30 a package compared to $7 a year ago. On top of supply chain disruptions, there is a dire labor shortage. Experts say getting people to work in the agri-food sector is becoming more difficult.
It was already difficult before the pandemic. It just got worse. So we're seeing wages go up 8-10% a year. Great news for employees, but unfortunately, someone has to pay for those increases.
And then there are rising transportation costs, with a sharp jump at the pump right across the country.
There is a shortage and an energy crisis that has now emerged, and it's not likely to abate anytime soon as more demand for products that are in less supply continue to weigh on the world economy.
The spike in prices is squeezing household budgets, forcing many consumers to rethink their spending habits. Vanessa Lee, CTV News, Montreal.
Police are concerned there could be more alleged victims. Alert now being issued with sexual assault charges laid against the man who advertised as a nanny. CTV's Beth McDonnell reports.
Outside Waterfront Montessori on Toronto Island as children were being let out last Thursday. Toronto police say a man sexually assaulted a number of children. Police say the accused also advertised services on the website CanadianNanny.ca.
To hear that it's somebody that is, you know, seeking access or looking for opportunities to connect with children in different ways, particularly through a nanny service, raises a lot of concern.
In an email to CTV News, the CEO of the company running the site says, "It is our practice to cooperate fully with the police. It should also go without saying that the instant we learn of such circumstances, we take appropriate steps to ensure that her profile will not be findable by parents." Toronto police have charged 24-year-old Prasanna Mondal of Toronto with sexual interference in connection with the incident at the daycare. He is also charged with sexual assault after two other incidents this month, one just 2 days prior to the one at the daycare involving a man near the ferry terminal, and one involving multiple people at a hotel near Front Street West and York Street. Following both the alleged incidents at the hotel and the daycare, police said they were concerned other victims may be out there. After appearing in court on Friday, documents show Mondal was released on $1,000 bail.
It's quite upsetting. They're all public places.
As part of Mondal's release, he must stay away from daycare, schools and playgrounds, the ferry terminal and Toronto Island. CanadianNanny.ca has resources to help families make safe hiring practices and offers a background check for a fee. The Canadian Centre for Child Protection says online services don't always have the same checks and balances as hiring someone in person.
Look at somebody within the community. Get reference checks from friends or neighbors.
It recommends caregivers play with children while parents are home to observe in-person interactions. Beth McDonnell, CTV News.
A warning about some of the details in this next story. Ontario's longest-running residential school is getting ready to unearth what could be another painful reminder of Canada's shameful past.
First Nation police training in Brantford today on how to scan for possible remains of Indigenous children in unmarked graves. CTV's Raheem Ladani joins us in studio with the very latest on the search efforts. Raheem.
Well, Nathan and Michelle, survivors are going to decide where to actually begin the search. But right now, teams from Six Nations of the Grand River are learning how to properly use a device that can detect items underground, including metal, water, and voids. Getting closer to knowing the truth. First Nation police and Six Nations community members are training at a nearby park for what will be a lengthy investigation.
But right now, we're just getting used to that machine.
Using ground-penetrating radar, a special task force will soon start examining the grounds for unmarked graves at the former Mohawk Institute Residential School in Brantford, where around 15,000 students attended during its 136 years of operation.
All the abuses that we suffered at there, you know, it's not only sexual, there's physical, mental, psychological, you know, like abuses. And those kind of things don't go away, like even with counseling.
There's more than 400 acres of land associated with the former residential school. Some sections have been searched in the past with no human remains uncovered. But Ontario's chief coroner has agreed to review findings going back to the 1980s, including the remains of a child under the age of 14, discovered on Glenwood Drive, 4 kilometers from the Mohawk Institute last August.
Yeah, it makes me angry that we have to do this. The training is important for not only the police task force, but community and the monitors and survivors, so everybody's aware of what's happening.
The province has also committed $10 million over the next 3 years to identify and commemorate burial sites across Ontario, with money also going to supports for survivors. Now, the timeline for when the search will be completed will be determined by weather. The teams have been told a comprehensive search isn't possible once there's lots of snow on the ground. Reporting live, I'm Raheem Ladani. Michelle, back to you.
Thank you, Raheem. At Queen's Park, Premier Doug Ford is facing more questions in the legislature about his comments on immigrants that critics say feed stereotypes.
He apologized for his hurtful and divisive comments towards new Canadians that are just plain wrong.
I was inundated from people from Brampton, from your community, from the Sikh community, that said you were bang on and told me the story how they came here, worked their back off, and said they're just playing politics.
The premier told reporters Monday newcomers should work hard and not rely on welfare. The opposition says the comments spread unfair implications about immigrants and the contributions they make to Canada each day. Ford says he's pro-immigration and is not apologizing.
To the pandemic next and the calls to require hospital workers be vaccinated in order to stay on the job.
It comes from the province's science advisory table. Our Sean Lethong is live at Queen's Park with more. Sean.
Well, Michelle and Nathan, there are nearly 700,000 healthcare workers in the province of Ontario who are fully vaccinated. It's a high number, but it's not 100%. The case that's being made by the science table is that to have everybody vaccinated will not only protect the workers, but it will protect those vulnerable patients.
And it's encouraging you to...
Mandatory vaccination for hospital workers. That's the advice the Ontario Science Table is sending to the provincial government. The reason? Protecting the vulnerable.
People who are fully vaccinated have a roughly 7 times lower risk to be diagnosed with a symptomatic COVID-19.
Last week, Premier Ford sent out a letter asking for expert advice on vaccine mandates. In their response, the science table said that a substantial number of COVID-19 cases originate inside hospitals, and vaccines, in contrast, provide consistent and ongoing protection to both healthcare workers and patients.
Any hospital workers who are not vaccinated must currently submit to regular testing, and there are some individual hospitals who already have a vaccine mandate in place.
A vaccine mandate is something that the Ontario Medical Association has been calling for since the summer.
We want to be able to protect not only ourselves and our colleagues, but ultimately the patients who we serve, many of whom are vulnerable, many of whom have underlying conditions, and we need to protect them first and foremost.
In contrast, the Ontario Nurses Association would not say if they back a vaccine mandate, only saying the ONA encourages and recommends healthcare workers receive the vaccine if they can. There's already a mandate in place for long-term care workers, with one home in Toronto having over 70 workers on unpaid leave for refusing the shot. That is something the health minister says the province is taking into consideration.
We want to make sure that our hospitals can continue to provide excellent quality care, so we have to weigh the benefits of mandatory vaccination versus the job losses that might happen for people who choose not to be vaccinated.
No timetable has been set for a decision from the province.
One of the questions that keeps coming up is the question of healthcare worker burnout. When it comes to a vaccine mandate, they're weighing the options of whether there would be people leaving the jobs, as you heard the health minister say there, or whether it would actually help in the long run because people who would get COVID-19 or would be exposed would have to stay home. Both the Ontario Medical Association and the science table say that the vaccine mandate would help that in the long run. Reporting live, I'm Sean Lethong. Michelle, I'll send it back to you.
Thank you, Sean. Across the province, 87.6% of eligible people have now received at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine. And more than 83.3% of eligible people are considered fully vaccinated. That represents nearly 10.9 million people in Ontario.
Toronto Public Health is encouraging parents and guardians to get their younger children vaccinated against COVID-19 when Health Canada gives the green light.
Protecting children through vaccination provides a protection that extends well beyond them and will contribute greatly to ending the pandemic.
Dr. Eileen Davila said she hopes Health Canada will approve a vaccine for the 5 to 11 age group in the coming week. Toronto Public Health is planning for the rollout.
Public Health Ontario is reporting 304 new cases in its most recent update. 220 of those cases are among people who either aren't fully vaccinated or their vaccination status is unknown. More than 31,000 tests have been processed in the last 24 hours, and the province's positivity rate is sitting at 1.3%.
537 more cases are now considered resolved, raising that total, sitting at more than 582,000 since the start of the pandemic. 4 additional deaths are linked to the virus, meaning 9,823 lives have been lost to COVID-19 in Ontario.
Tonight's regional breakdown includes 46 new cases in the city of Toronto, with 22 in York Region and 20 in Hamilton. There are 15 new cases in Durham Region, with 13 in Peel. Niagara logged 9 new cases, with 8 in Halton Region.
Her every move is closely watched, every decision scrutinized. So it was big news today when the Queen canceled a 2-day visit to Northern Ireland. She hosted a reception at Windsor Castle last night for billionaire business leaders. But now the 95-year-old monarch is resting for the next few days on the advice of doctors. The palace is not saying why, but insists Her Majesty's in good spirits and is looking forward to visiting Northern Ireland in the future. A source says the Queen's decision is not related to COVID-19.
Canada's Governor General is likely thinking about Her Majesty tonight.
Mary May Simon is in Germany, wrapping up her first official trip since becoming the Queen's representative in Canada. CTV's Annie Bergeron Oliver reports from Frankfurt.
Some 6,000 kilometers away from Canada and only 4 months into her new position as Governor General.
It's a design that I've made for shirt day.
Mary May Simon's impact is already being felt.
It means an incredible amount to me as an Indigenous person to have a strong Indigenous matriarch who is taking up that role.
But we're not backing down.
A role with a global spotlight, including this week in Germany, that May Simon promises to shine squarely on reconciliation. In an interview with CTV News, the Governor General said she views herself as a bridge between governments and Indigenous people.
Without that understanding, without the work that is necessary, reconciliation is going to be a very slow process. It's a lifelong process, but we somehow have to speed it up a bit.
The path forward, May Simon says, involves difficult but crucial conversations. One way to start, sharing the stories, traditions, and cultures like those on display at this week's Frankfurt Book Fair, at which Canada is a guest of honour.
We are finally part of this culture in a different way, with our own distinct culture and our own identity, that we can also be a part of events like the book fair.
Asked what mark she wants to leave, May Simon says her goals aren't personal.
I want to leave a legacy where we have done significant work in those areas that will go way beyond my term.
After 4 nights in Germany, the Governor General returns to Ottawa tomorrow, where in just a few days, she will swear in the new Liberal government. Annie Bergeron-Oliver, CTV News, Frankfurt.
Still ahead, it's been a pandemic predicament. On the go with nowhere to go. The new legislation on the way and what it means for delivery drivers needing a washroom.
I'm Pat Foran. Coming up on Consumer Alert, imagine going into a convenience store and there is no employee behind the counter. Self-serve shopping is the latest trend in retail. New stores that allow you to shop 24 hours a day are popping up across Toronto. I'll have the details just ahead.
Partly cloudy this evening, on the milder side, light winds going to a low of 14, which is above seasonal for the overnight. Showers starting up after midnight and then rain likely getting going as we get into the earlier morning hours. Tomorrow will still be warmer, but we have the risk of seeing showers and thunderstorms throughout the day with gusty winds. Temperatures starting to fall tomorrow night. I'll break down what else you can expect in your 7-day forecast coming up very soon. Stay with us.
There are about 7,500 convenience stores in Ontario, and most of them have at least one employee behind the counter.
Well, now there's a new type of store popping up in Toronto where customers serve themselves and there are no cashiers. Pat Foran looks at this new trend on Consumer Alert. Pat.
Thanks, Nathan and Michelle. Self-serve checkouts have been used for years at some grocery and drug stores, but these new convenience stores have no employees present at all. They're open 24 hours a day, and there's a plan to open hundreds of them across the country.
Expect to see more stores like this in the GTA. There are currently 9 aisle 24 locations in Ontario and Quebec, and the company plans to open another 30 soon.
The store is completely unmanned and cashierless. In order to get into the store, you need to have a mobile app.
John DeWang with Aisle 24 says once you download the mobile app and create an account, you can get inside. You pick out what you want to buy, go to the checkout station, scan your items, and make your payment. DeWang says that cameras and a security system ensures all goods are paid for. While there has been criticism the store has done away with cashier jobs, DeWang says it's not a position many people want.
There's a labor shortage, and a lot of people that are out there right now don't want these low-wage frontline jobs. And they're holding out for something better.
He says the company still needs employees to stock shelves, order product, and monitor the stores.
While we don't have frontline workers, there are a lot of staff behind the scenes that are making this happen.
Zane Akuti stopped in to check out the self-serve option. He says the area has few convenience stores nearby.
It appeals really well to like my demographic. It's very simple now to do everything wirelessly and through our phone.
Self-serve stores are happening around the world and work in a similar way, such as this shop in Germany. Depending on the location, some may carry more grocery items. Many are set in underserved areas, and Duang says Aisle 24 has a goal to open 200 stores in Canada within the next 2 years. He believes other retailers will also adopt this format.
This type of technology automation is going to be very prevalent in many different businesses.
And these types of self-serve stores could also be a good fit for an apartment building or condominium. That way, customers don't need to make a big trip to get common items, and they can be open 24 hours a day. On your side, I'm Pat Foran.
If you have a consumer story idea, email us at alert@ctv.ca.
Nathan and I both agree we have been spoiled. Just lovely conditions on Bay Street behind us tonight. But tomorrow, I think things change and you have to consider the weather when you're heading out.
Yeah, true. It was fun while it lasted, Michelle.
Well, yes, you're right. I mean, most of the month of October, we have been trending above seasonal. In some cases, well above seasonal. We get a bit of that into tomorrow, but then things will indeed change. So let's talk about that. Weather is brought to you by Trane, the most reliable heating and cooling brand. It's hard to stop a train. So let's take a look at how things are doing in terms of temperatures. There was record-breaking warmth yesterday in northwestern Ontario, northeastern Ontario, where temperatures in Thunder Bay got over 25 degrees. Not so much today. 6 degrees is our current temperature in Thunder Bay, 2 in Geraldton, 2 in Timmins. This is a bit of a sign of what's on the way, though we won't drop this low as our daytime highs. It's definitely going to get cooler after a system works its way through. So we've reached around the 20-degree mark through the region today. Not going to be much cooler than that through the overnight period because we're looking at a low of 14 degrees, which is well above our seasonal high, or low, that is, of 5 degrees. We do have increasing cloud cover and showers starting up after midnight. Few spotty showers today through the GTA, not a lot of rain, but there will be more on the way. This is not going to be a heavy rainfall event for the city of Toronto. There will be more rain to the north and to the southwest of us, and also the Niagara region could see some heavier rain and some active weather tomorrow. Temperatures will still be on the warmer side. Note 18 versus our seasonal high for this time of the year of 12 degrees. And I'm going to break down what we can expect. The system is moving in from the west, of course, and it's a succession of lows plus a relatively strong cold front that's going to change things up for us. So we get the first round of moisture and then another one as the front rolls through. And the concern is seeing some thunderstorm activity with the cold front moving through, especially. We do have a widespread risk of that. So just putting our future radar in motion, we see the showers moving in earlier in the morning, another round in the afternoon, and we could see some heavier activity in the Niagara region later on in the day, and then winds shift to be out of the northwest, and that's going to help to cool us down for our day on Friday. So 18 tomorrow with those showers and storms, just 10 as our high on Friday, 2 as our overnight low, and then we get quite a bit cooler for the weekend and through the beginning of next week. Back to you, Michelle.
Thank you. They spend long hours on the road, but like everyone else, nature eventually comes calling.
And finding a washroom can be a challenge for delivery drivers, but now the province is hoping to provide some relief. CTV's Scott Lightfoot reports.
For those on the go, who have to go, it's an announcement that will help.
It's been an issue in a lot of places, in a lot of cases, yes.
Walter Tautara delivers meat and is on the road 40 hours a week. He admits the pandemic caused some pain when it came to finding an open restroom.
I do some out-of-town work as well, and when the gas stations and that start not letting you use the washroom when you buy diesel or whatever, it's pretty rough, yeah.
Today, the Ontario government announced they will introduce legislation that will allow delivery workers access to washrooms at businesses where they are picking up or dropping off items.
It's a disgrace that these drivers have to plan their day around when they can find an open door. Giving people access to a basic facility like a clean washroom is a matter of common decency.
Wayne Nichols, who delivers wine, took matters into his own hand, or rather his own truck, during the pandemic.
It was very, very tough. Very tough. In fact, I purchased my own portable toilet.
travel with me in the truck.
The government says the proposed legislation would cover a number of professions. According to the Ministry of Labor, last year there were more than 203,000 people in this province working as transport, bus, taxi, or delivery drivers, and more than 30,000 people working as mail, courier, messenger, and door-to-door distributors. The government says the proposed legislation would also cover gig workers who do food delivery. Details on just how the proposed legislation would work have yet to be released, but the plan is a relief for many tired of looking for a place to relieve themselves.
Yeah, it would be nice to be able to, without just, you know, using trees and bushes, yes.
Scott Lightfoot, CTV News.
Also tonight, dog owners in the beach with a bone to pick over new signage. A beloved off-leash area suddenly not so dog-friendly. But all is not as it seems. A new hospital tower on Elm Street is well on its way as SickKids continues to build for the future.
And tonight it's launching a new virtual art gallery showcasing the design ideas from young patients. Our health reporter Pauline Chan has more.
14-year-old Tanika Jacobs has been in and out of SickKids Hospital for the past several years, including for two double lung transplants.
I love artwork, and that's how I just generally express my emotions in general instead of having to talk because it can be hard to talk.
Early in her hospital visits, she had a doctor who dubbed her Tanika the Tiger for her fierce fighter spirit. And that's become her theme for the virtual artwork she's created for SickKids Imaginarium, a virtual art gallery. It's in support of the new hospital being constructed, and Tanika hopes her tiger motif can guide the design for more spacious patient rooms.
I thought it would be cool if they could, like, somehow have it themed around tiger, and just, like, it also represents, like, how strong, like, kids at the hospital are.
Their vision and their designs, we really shine a light on the need for more green spaces, more space for their families, more space for technology.
Rayon Lodi tackles the importance of hospital technology in his design, My IV Robot. It stems from an incident when he was being treated for leukemia and accidentally hit his foot on his IV pole. The conditions of his illness meant he got a massive bruise that lasted several months.
Oh, yes, I had lots of IVs. I was always on IVs. I can't remember a time when I was not on IVs.
But he's grateful for all those IV treatments and more, as he now leads the normal life of a 15-year-old.
Now I'm perfectly fine. I'm walking, a normal high school student, going to school.
And he hopes the artworks on display at the SickKids Imaginarium website will inspire the community to support the construction of the new Hospital for Sick Children. Pauline Chan, CTV News.
For more than two decades, the Real World Film Festival has shifted the traditional focus of film production to shine a light on the changing face of the media landscape.
Now in its 21st year, it's inspired to make the changes in front of and behind the camera. CTV's Andrea Case joins us with more. Andrea.
Nathan and Michelle, every time I look at you, you guys put a smile on my face. Yes, the festival opens just minutes from now with a film which tells a story about a very different Canadian story. Festival organizer Tanya Williams says there is no one Canadian voice, and we are a melting pot of a lot of different voices, and that's what Real World reflects.
Filmmaker and musician Kevin Abatian brought his student film to the Real World Film Festival in its inaugural year 21 years ago. It won the Best Short Film Prize. Tonight, his feature film, Sin La Habana, is the annual festival's opening night film.
It's a film about an Afro-Cuban ballet dancer who wants to leave Cuba with his girlfriend and come to Montreal. And the way he's able to do that is by seducing an Iranian-Canadian Jewish woman. And so it's about culture clashes, and it's very much told through dance and music.
It is exactly the type of project the festival seeks to uplift, and as an Iranian-Canadian, the type of filmmaker the festival's mandate supports, empowering Black, Indigenous, Asian, South Asian, Middle Eastern, and Latin American voices.
It's still really important to have film festivals that will focus on people who are marginalized by the mainstream media.
From the polka dot door to The Young and the Restless, actor and producer Tanya Williams experienced the struggle, so she created the Real World Film Festival.
It's great, you know, to see these movies from the perspective of a lot of Canadians from these different communities and how they are dealing or moving or really transforming what it is to be Canadian.
Real World is also doing that through Access Real World.
There has been a serious lack of Black casting directors, Black agents, and Black managers across Canada, and we're putting together an entire training program that should churn out about 48 new talent over the next 4 years within these areas, and that's going to affect how people find the talent that they're looking for now.
Access Real World is also recruiting a platform. It allows industry people to post their resume. Now, most festival films will be screened virtually, but on both Sunday and Monday, select titles will be shown at Paradise Cinema at Bloor Street West and Dovercourt. Reporting for CTV News, I'm Andrea Case.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Last Man's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
I'm still coping with the thing that I still know her, but she still passed away. It's still hurting.
She always had a smile on her face, like no matter what the day was. If she had a bad day, good day, she was always bringing smiles to everybody else's faces.
Updating our top story, Scarborough High School students are dealing with the death of a classmate. 17-year-old Nadia Muzumdar was struck and killed by a vehicle just meters away from her school yesterday.
Here we go. We're back. The NBA is back.
Mm-hmm. And it's a return 600 days in the making. The Raptors will take the court tonight for their first regular season game in Toronto since February of 2020. Scotiabank Arena will be packed with fans cheering on a team that looks considerably different than the one that hit the court last season.
On the markets, the Canadian dollar was up 28 basis points to 81.14 U.S. American benchmark oil gained 91 cents a barrel to close at 83.87. And the TSX Composite Index gained 101 points to close at a new high of 21,188.
Bitcoin rose to a new all-time high today. The cryptocurrency broke above the 66,000 mark in U.S. dollars, surpassing a record set this past April. The surge came after the first exchange-traded fund, or ETF, linked to Bitcoin, launched south of the border on Tuesday. That's fueling optimism. Bitcoin will see more mainstream acceptance going forward.
Facebook is reportedly planning a corporate rebrand. The social media giant owns a range of apps and companies outside of its flagship website. The Verge reports CEO Mark Zuckerberg could announce the new name at a Facebook conference on October 28th or sooner. The report says Facebook is aiming to expand past social media and increase negative attention on that part of the internet. A Facebook spokesperson didn't comment on The Verge's report.
Athletes competing for Canada at the upcoming Winter Olympics and Paralympics must be fully vaccinated against COVID-19. Canadian officials announced a vaccine mandate today. It aligns with a federal requirement that all air passengers be vaccinated by October 30th. China also has a 21-day quarantine mandate for travelers who have not been immunized. The Beijing Games begin February 4th. In just a few days, some benefits that have kept many individuals and businesses afloat are slated to come to an end.
And that's the focus of a discussion on CP24 tonight. We're joined by Christina Tenaglia and our Colin DeMello, who's co-anchoring this week. Colin, you'll be digging into the results of a new survey about the Canada Recovery Benefit.
And in fact, Nathan, some of the people who received the benefits say they want those pandemic benefits to end this year. But businesses say those federal benefits have helped keep them afloat and they still need them. We'll dive into that topic on CP24 tonight.
And Christina, you'll also be taking a closer look at CAFE-TO and the push to make it permanent.
Yeah, so this was essentially a semi-permanent program, a temporary program, if you want to call it that. The idea, restaurants in the city that did not have patios could essentially offer curbside dining during the pandemic when indoor dining was not permitted. So the city staff have recommended to the City of Toronto that this become a permanent fixture in our city. But the program has taken up some 940 curb lanes. What does this mean for drivers, cyclists, even pedestrians, and traffic and construction in the city? This is a topic we'll explore on CP24 tonight.
Christina, Colin, thank you. And CP24 tonight airs immediately following this newscast on CP24 from 7 to 9. Finally tonight, relief for dog owners in the beaches. Their pets will be free to roam as usual this winter.
Locals quick to protest an apparent leash law change until it became clear
A simple typo was to blame. CTV's Natalie Johnson has the story.
It began with a sign that made waves at the beach. Dog owners upset that it appeared the winter beach rules had changed due to new signs that indicated that dogs must be leashed on the sand between November and March, when for years during those colder months, dogs were allowed to run free south of the snow fence.
It's not good, right? The dogs need to run.
I think it's good for them to like get out and have a change of scenery and, you know, run around with their friends. They have a lot more space.
When a pic of the sign was shared on social media, beachers were baffled. "This is why we can't have nice things," wrote one poster. "My poor off-leash dog has been waiting all year for this," said another. Locals began looking up legislation, decrying a lack of public consultation, and asking neighbors to write letters to City Hall. Until...
typo.
It became clear it was all one big misunderstanding. The city telling CTV News that the incorrect signs had been installed and were being taken down, saying there is no change to the dog's off-leash regulation at these locations. "We apologize for any inconvenience." Hi. Good news for those who want to let Rover roam.
I'd rather be able to have them off the leash. I've got one that's very well controlled, so he can be off the leash fine.
Why not? It's not hurting people. It's not getting in people's way. So I think it's a fun thing to do.
Canine conflict averted. Leash laws no longer on the fence. Natalie Johnson, CTV News.
All right, good to hear. Michelle, tonight.
14 degrees overnight, so mild. We'll have showers beginning in the early morning hours. Risk of thunderstorms throughout the day tomorrow. And we'll see a high of 18 degrees. Gusty winds at times after tomorrow. Temperature starts dropping just 6 degrees overnight and then much cooler through the rest of the 7 days. So get ready for that. Back to you, Michelle.
Good to know. Thank you. And be sure to join Zoraida Allman later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
You can also stay up to date by going to our website. And a reminder, CP24 tonight begins momentarily on CP24.
For Michelle Jobin and all of us here at CTV News, have a great night.